Can you state your full name and ABC number for the record, sir?
John O. De Oliveira, 092679.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-412A parole hearing to consider record of parole or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. They are, as you can see on your video conference screen, beginning with me because I'm the individual sitting closest to you. My name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for this hearing. Next to me is Honorable Mr. David Neal. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. And at the opposite end of the bench is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. I will begin this hearing with a summary. Mr. De Oliveira?
Yes, sir.
Mr. De Oliveira is 54 years old. He was certified eligible by DOC for 31-412A regular parole absolute discharge. The crime of reckless manslaughter occurred on or about June 10, 1991. He was approximately 27 years old at the time of the offense. On June 17, 1992, Mr. De Oliveira was found guilty by jury trial. On July 17, 1992, he was sentenced to life imprisonment. It should be noted that the aforementioned crime occurred while Mr. De Oliveira was on probation for a 1987 controlled substance violation out of Massachusetts. He had an extensive out-of-state criminal history. Mr. De Oliveira appealed his case in February 1994. His conviction was upheld. It should be noted that he has an ICE detainer. I'll read a summary of the offense in question. On June 9, 1991, Mr. De Oliveira killed Christopher Rand. The victim was the uncle of Mr. De Oliveira's former girlfriend, Mary Galvin. Mr. De Oliveira, Mary, and the victim were in the same apartment for a period of time, but Mr. De Oliveira moved out several weeks before the incident. On the day of the incident, Mr. De Oliveira went to the apartment at 5 a.m. to pick up Mary for a trip to Laughlin. When he entered the apartment, he observed the victim sleeping on the couch. He proceeded to Mary's bedroom, where he saw her sleeping with another man. Mr. De Oliveira became enraged. He went back to the truck to grab a metal tool with the intent to beat the other male. When Mr. De Oliveira re-entered the apartment, the victim got up from the couch and Mr. De Oliveira struck him in the head with a metal tool. The victim died as a result of the assault. Mr. De Oliveira has completed limited programming in the DOC. According to his progress report, he has a release plan that involves living in a church-sponsored halfway house, utilizing money he saved while incarcerated, working in construction, and pursuing faith-based service such as missionary work. Let me double-check on that. Yes, I just want to make sure that that was consistent. He had a moderate disciplinary history in the Department of Corrections from 1992 to 2012, with his last major on April 9, 1992, for a positive or refusal to UA. This is his third name before the board. He has letters of support from a friend in the community. We also have past notification that there was a victim opposing parole. It should be noted that we also have an April 23, 2018 letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office opposing parole. Mr. De Oliveira, this is another opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us about the offense that resulted in your incarceration? Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. There's a couple of things okay, I'd like to clear up.
Sure.
I was living with my girlfriend. Well, she was we were living together for 5 years, and we had two children. And we let Chris move in with us because you know, he didn't have a place to stay, even though he had a wife and two daughters, and he had two sisters. You know, they didn't want to take him in, so we took him in. And then as soon as he moved in, about a week or two later, stuff started happening. It started disappearing out of the house. and we started having issues, okay? And then I got into an argument with Mary Lou, and he got three of his friends. They came over and they beat me up, okay? My blood was still there when this happened all over the house, in the hallway and on the yard. They forced me out, okay? I went to live with somebody I was working with, construction, and but I was still seeing Mary Lou and the children, and we had plans to go out that weekend. When I got there, just like you read in the thing, he was on the couch, and I went to the bedroom where she was up, you know, sleeping with another guy. Well, that's when I was not just upset, but, you know, that was my house. Everything in there was mine, and I just wanted these guys out of my house. I had no intentions of killing them. I tried to hit him on the arms, but I got him on the head once, and the medical report shows that he had 1-inch cut on the side of his head. When he went down, I thought he was knocked out. Mary Lou was there. The other guy and I, we came out of the bedroom. So we had a couple of words and then I just left. I was just, you know, disgusted with everything. And then when I got arrested, they charged me with aggravated assault. And a couple of days later, they told the family that he was in a coma, and even if he came out of a coma, he would probably be a vegetable. So they decided to unplug him from the life support, and then they brought the charges after second degree murder. And then that's, you know, when I went to court, they offered me a plea bargain, which was 5, 7.5, or 10, the presumptive being 7.5, which I agreed to. But then when I went in front of the judge, he wanted to give him the 10 years, and I said, that's not what we agreed to. And so he said, fine, we'll take it to trial. And the probation back east, I thought, that was my first time I got in trouble with the law. I thought once the time was over, the probation was up, you know, was over. And that's when we moved out here. I also like to mention something, you know, a comment that I have an extensive criminal record. I had as far as I can remember, I had a ticket for spinning tires in 1980. And then, you know, I got married, I worked, I had my own business building houses. I got divorced, I lost my family, and started drinking, going out. Then I met Mary Lou when she was a cocktail waitress, and she liked, you know, getting high, and I started getting high with her. And for about two and a half years, that period of day, that's when, you know, I did a lot of stupid stuff, you know. Drinking, disturbing the peace, put a plate in the wrong, another car, you know, it's nothing, I went through a hard time there after my divorce. I was so depressed. I didn't care about life. I started drinking, doing drugs, and just to get out of that the state I was in. I didn't know anything about depression. So, and then we had two children, and then that's when we decided, you know, she wanted to move out here so we can be closer to family, and that's what. That's what our plan was, to live as a family. And then this happened.
Okay, sir. I certainly am not trying to run you down with the reference to your criminal history, but you did have quite a few arrests. I recognize they weren't for murder, but there's controlled substance issues, just a variety of charges out of Fall River, in addition to, I think, receiving stolen property. Somewhere near you moving to Arizona, you did have an arrest. There's no disposition out of Pawtucket, Rhode Island, for carrying a concealed weapon. So were the charges dropped on that?
Yes, I have a license to carry because I have my own business, so they dropped the charge.
This is more of a curiosity. You said that you'd been beat up before this incident happened. Was the individual that was with your partner, that you found sleeping with your partner, was he one of the individuals that had beat you up?
No.
Okay.
No. Chris was living with us, and he got three of his friends, but I was working construction with this other guy, and that's when they forced me out of my house, that's who I went to stay with.
I'm going to jump around a bit. It looks like that you haven't had a lot of programming in the Department of Corrections. Why is that?
I've been back in 96, I decided, I had been studying the philosophy and theology and all that, and I re-examined what were my goals in life, and what was the meaning of life, and I decided to take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, just like a religious person does. And since then, that's what I've been doing. I've been studying, praying, and doing the work they give me here. So I've been studying theology, philosophy, psychology, metaphysics, you know, all that stuff.
Well, if I may interrupt,
that's what I do.
When did you make that decision, sir?
In 96.
Okay. Because it would seem that you still had some drug possession issues up until 2012. Were you continuing to use drugs inside the Department of Corrections?
I have a hard time peeing, and I have a medical order from the doctor that says I have an enlarged prostate. So I failed to produce it a few times, and one of those times, they charged me with a DO7, and I sent a copy. On the ticket, it says BO7, refusing to produce. Well, the BO7, they say it's possession of drugs. So I guess they assumed I had drugs in my system, and that's what they charged me with. When I went to see the captain, he says, well, you're probably more guilty than not. And so I haven't. When I took those vows, you know, obedience means obedience to the commandments, obedience to God, and to the law, because breaking the law is a sin, and I have not broken my vow since then.
I guess I'm just a little confused, because you said that was in 96, and there's quite a few majors here.
Yes.
So, and a couple of them were for drug possession, not just disobeying or refusal. You made reference to prostate issues, which many men in this world can relate to. But I'm not so sure about the drug possession. So we know that you had a history with drugs when you were outside of the correction system. So did you have any continuing drug use inside the Department of Corrections?
No, sir. They wrote it as a BO7, but it was refusal to produce. And I sent a copy to the parole law. Also,
well, there's four tickets in 2006 guilty of major for drug possession, not positive or refusal. So what were those?
On the ticket, it says feel savage, but if you read what it's written down as a refusal. So they charged me for possession because I couldn't, you know, provide a urine sample.
Okay, sir. Let's talk about this, and I know this is not the first time you've appeared before at least most of the members of this board. I think I handled your hearing the last time. It's my understanding you have an ICE detainer.
Yes, sir.
We have to take the information that's provided to us in Ames in good faith. It looks like that detainer is still active. Are you aware of that?
Yes, sir.
And I can't remember. I remember asking this question. Was it out of Osoyoos, or what was it?
No, I moved from Canada. Well, my mom.
Oh, from Canada.
My mom decided to move from Toronto, Canada, when I was like 16.
I see.
To the States.
That's what it was. And was your mom an immigrant to Canada?
Yes.
Where was she from?
Portugal.
Okay, Portugal. Because I remember the Portuguese connection. I just couldn't remember what it was. If it was direct, or like I said, a sort of now it's coming back to me. So your ICE detainer is out of Canada.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you still have Canadian citizenship, sir?
As far as I know, yes, sir.
Thank you. I do want to commend you, and I know I was pretty direct about your discipline inside the correction system, but nonetheless, it looks like, and let me just be sure before I speak too quickly, that you have not had a major since 2012. And that was for positive refusal. We talked about that, but that's getting, actually, I think you hit 6 years without discipline, so I want to make sure that you know that I recognize that as the panel chairman, and that's a good sign. Also, I'm careful not to mix religion with government here, but I think you pursuing a spiritual life is probably been positive for you. So did you plan on living in the religious community? If you're eventually released from the correction system?
No, I plan to join the religious community, but they have three branches. They have the consecrated men, which live in the monastery, and they have the women, which is the second branch, which is the nuns, and they also have a secular branch. We live by the same rules, by this, you know, whichever, you know, it could be Franciscans or Dominicans, but live in the community. You know, I can have my own place and a job, and but keep the same vows. And I also like to, okay, since 96, I sold everything I didn't need, and I donated the money to non-profit charitable organizations. I also, ever since then, I donate over 60%. Any money I make or donate or I receive, I donate it to non-profit organizations every month. So you can check in my banking account, you know. So I am serious about that. That's my goal, is to be a good person, but or more specifically to be a holy person. That's my goal in life. I don't care about making money or buying stuff or seeking pleasure. I'm trying to be a good person because that's what's important to me. And so when I stand in front of God, and as I can try my best.
Well, sir, I'm going to ask you some practical questions here. And I have no idea how this board's going to vote today. We don't discuss these cases before we come into the boardroom. We operate on the open meeting laws of Arizona. I'm very proud of the independence of each of the board members in this room, but there are practical issues, and that is, I noticed that in your progress report that there's reference to having four religious houses that you would like to apply for upon release, I do appreciate that you say that you've been donating money, which I think shows a lot of character, but there is that practical issue of being accepted into a community, a halfway house, whether or not you have resources and a solid plan before we can consider the possibility of returning you to the community under supervised release. So have you been accepted into any halfway house, or like, do you have firm acceptance?
Yes, I have one halfway house, yes, I have been accepted. Also, the religious houses, they will take you in for a month or two until, you know, you decide, you know, what you want to do. I also have about $5,000 that I can use till I get settled, you know, get a job or apartment or something.
And how do you plan on dealing with the ICE issue? Meaning, if down the road you're considering living in that type of community, are you thinking about fundamentally living in a community in Canada?
Yes. So wherever I go, yes. So that's my goal in life. Yes.
Okay. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you.
Let me ask
one. Oh yes, Mr. Johnson.
So I know you mentioned your wife and your kids. How come you have any contact with them or any support from any of them?
Yes, they write me not too often, but I have a sister back in Massachusetts, and she's the one I'm in contact with every week, and she tells me how my children are doing, my grandchildren. I also have grandchildren.
Okay.
And that's how I keep in touch with the family.
Okay, so you have no one-on-one contact with your kids or your grandkids? You have no one-on-one contact with your kids or your grandkids, sir?
Yeah, with my daughter, yeah. I call my daughter, yeah. But, and I talk to my grandson. But my two sons, no, I haven't heard from them in a while, but they're in contact with my sister, and so I stay in touch, with them through her.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further questions for both board members?
No, sir.
Okay, Mr. Gilbert, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Well, I'd like to ask one more question, and that is, again, it's in the category of the practical. You said that you already had acceptance from one halfway house. Which halfway house was that, sir? I know we have quite a bit of information in your full packet, but...
Changes in Mesa.
And because we work for the state of Arizona, we're not necessarily experts on what happens with people when there's an ICE detainer, so to your research, and I'm just taking this on good faith, what do you think would transpire regarding that ICE detainer should this board vote to grant regular parole?
As far as I know, they'll hold me until there's an immigration hearing, and then they will decide. But I try to get in touch with the Canadian consulate, and they haven't replied back. I've been in this country for almost 50 years. I have children, grandchildren, so I don't know what would be the outcome of that immigration hearing. As far as I know, I'm able to get a lawyer, and and then it'll be up to them whether I'll stay here or they'll deport me back.
Okay. Just give me a moment here, and I'm just going to ask, just from your experience, I know you're new, but I'm asking you as a parole officer, do you have any experience as to what happens during that transition?
I do not. I do believe that if he would go to immigration, and like you said, there would be a hearing, and they would have to decide whether or not to release him here or whether they would send him back.
Okay.
So I don't know if that would happen at the beginning of his release or at the end.
Okay. Certainly, I can't really rely on that from anyone, but there's always that opportunity to learn a little bit more about that, because it does seem a little complicated. Okay, Mr. De Oliveira, as I stated, we're getting close to the end of your hearing, so is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, but this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel that you need to share?
I'd just like to thank you for your patience, and I'm sorry if I haven't been too clear. I'm not very good at public speaking, but, like I says, my goal is to be a good person, or like I says, to be a holy person. That's what's important in my life. I don't have no other, goals, like I says, other making money or buying stuff or anything like that. And just, seeing my grandchildren and being a grandfather.
Thank you, Mr. De Oliveira. The board will be going into discussion now on the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just remain on the phone, you can listen to us, have our discussion, and we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir. Thank you for being so pleasant with the board today.
Thank you.
The board is now in discussion. Well, board members, I'll try to keep it succinct. As one voting board member, I think Mr. De Oliveira is on a good trajectory, if you will. He's just hitting 6 years discipline free, and I think that's around pretty early for me when I start looking at that sort of behavior as one factor. It looks like that he's been keeping himself out of trouble. I'm impressed with his sense of community and generosity. It seems that he is heavily involved in religious pursuits. And I recognize the reason why I ask so many questions is that it can be complicated when we consider an individual who has an ICE detainer. So I'll just bring it together and say I like the direction that he's moving in right now. If I was going to, as one voting board member, consider him for parole to his, for regular parole or absolute discharge, more than likely regular parole, I would like to see a stronger release plan. I like what he's saying here. He's talking about religious houses. He has the one acceptance from a halfway house in Mesa. He has some money set aside, but I think I would like to see something firmer about the actual process between the state and ICE before I'm willing to vote in that direction. But that's where I'll begin, and I certainly can be reasoned with.
Sure.
Yes, Doctor.
I must agree with you, sir. I think that, yes, he's made progress, and at some point he will be a good candidate to be released, but I agree that we do have that situation with ICE in relates to his Canadian passport and possibly his mother's from Portugal. In addition to that, he indicated to you, sir, that he has about $2,000, I think, set aside, but according to his release package, it shows $155, and I'm a little concerned about that, because that's just what I guess the CO3 was right, that now they say he only has $155.35, in which he is going to utilize this amount in order to meet the expensive. Well, he's getting a job in construction and so forth, so I think that he really needs to have more in his account than this $155.
Thank you, Doctor. Any further discussion? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion and see where the votes land. And before I say anything, again, I do want to be encouraging. I know we can make no promises as a board by any shape of imagination, but I want to say again that I do like the direction that Mr. De Oliveira is moving in, and I find it positive. So I'm going to make a motion. Just give me a moment. And that is my motion, is to deny, and really have these two choices, I think, based on the ICE detainer, regular parole or absolute discharge. And based on the year of the instant offense, I'm asking for a one-year set-off.
Second.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Seconded by Mr. Neal, agreed upon by Dr. Wright and Mr. Johnson. Ask for a one-year set-off. Release type denied is only regular parole absolute discharge or 412A 411. And my reasons are as follows. And I certainly look to the input of my colleagues if I'm missing something. It's a serious and violent offense, loss of human life, trauma to the victim. I think we have I want to make sure that I get this correct. Yeah, he was on probation at the time of the offense. Prior criminal history, his institutional behavior has been good for 6 years. I'm not going to check that unless anyone has a strong feeling about that. I like what he's saying about what he's done to prepare himself mentally. There's still no programming. Is there anything else that anyone wishes to add? I know that I made a point of his release plan. I can't quite say that it's poor as much as I'll say that it's vague. So I'm going to go ahead and check that. Does anyone have any concern about that? Because certainly I want that to be a point of encouragement to Mr. De Oliveira.
Yes.
Anything in the other category? Okay, Mr. De Oliveira. The board has made its decision to deny regular parole or absolute discharge. Did you hear our reasons?
Yes, sir.
Well, you heard the dialogue, but let me say it directly as the panel chairman before we bring this hearing to a close. We can make no promises, but I mean when I say I think you're on a good path. Seems like that you're working hard in your self-development, and we hope to see a stronger release plan in the future.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This brings our hearing to a close.